WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Man, oh man, is it a great day outside or what? Now, you know, usually when I say that, sometimes I speak, you know, metaphorically in a sense, because Michigan's weather has been beating us up for quite some time now. But man, I mean it literally today, folks. It's about 50 degrees outside. The sun is shining. The birds are chirping. Man, is it a good day to be in mid-Michigan. And welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin, on this April Fool's. How about that? April 1st. We've got a great show in store for you all today, filled with a ton of discussion. Today, we'll talk about the infidelities in the NFL centered around the Atlanta Falcons and also the Cleveland Browns. Also, the Detroit Lions want Matthew Stafford to air the ball out a little bit more. Can you believe that? We'll chat about that. Also, we have a special Barbershop Wednesday in store for you. As I tell you what, Jim Harbaugh, he's going to work, and a certain coach at a certain school down south doesn't like what he's trying to pull off. We'll describe that in just a sec. Also, we'll give you a end-of-season analysis concerning the Detroit Pistons and Red Wings. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, to start this party like we always do, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this April 1st. All right, folks, let's start with Ariel Powers. Michigan State forward Ariel Powers was named AP Honorable Mention on Tuesday. She averaged 21.9 points and 12.1 rebounds per game as a sophomore, both leading the team. Was she great or what this year? She just continues to rack up the hardware during the offseason now. All right, the men's Final Four championship games are coming up this weekend, and late-night host Jimmy Fallon brought out his puppy predictors to decide who is going to win. Now, if you haven't seen it, you know, he takes these adorable little puppies and, you know, there's four bowls set outside of a glass. He lets the glass up and, you know, the puppies go and whoever, you know, how many puppies are eating out of the bowl, the most puppies who are eating out of a certain bowl predict the winner because they all have like a name, you know, Michigan State, Duke, you know, University of Kentucky and Wisconsin on it. And the puppies were released, and much chose Michigan State to eat from. Actually, three puppies chose Michigan State to eat from. Now, of the seven puppies, one ate out of the Kentucky Bowl, one of the Wisconsin Bowl, and again, three out of the MSU Bowl. So, according to the puppies, Michigan State will be crowned its national champions on Monday. Book your bet out in Vegas, huh? All right. With U of M football recently releasing the details of their annual spring game, there was a notable exception to the festivities. Now, there is no alumni flag football game in the works for this year's edition of the game. How sad. All right. Michigan is hosting a satellite camp across the country on June 5th in Alabama, at the school where one of the 2015 signees, Keith Washington, attended. Now, one SEC coach, Auburn's Gus Malzahn, isn't happy about it because the SEC has a rule stating that schools cannot participate in camps 50 miles outside of campus. Now, in an interview with the Montgomery Advisor, Malzahn said he is hoping this rule is enforced across the country, saying, quote, "I think the SEC coaches last year made it clear that we like it to be that way throughout the country. That was a stance after our last spring meetings, and I still feel the same." All right, moving on now. Three Pistons finished with double doubles, as Detroit downed the Atlanta Hawks last night. How about those Pistons? Andre Drummond had 22 points and 13 rebounds. Reggie Jackson had 12 points, 11 assists. And Anthony Tolliver finished with 13 points and 10 rebounds. Detroit has won five out of their last six games. And last night, the Ottawa Senators beat the Detroit Red Wings 2-1. Gustav Nyquist scored the first and only shot for the Wings, and this is the second straight loss for the Detroit Red Wings. The Senators outshot the Wings 25-11 in the first two periods, with Peter Mrazek stopping 33 shots total. Now, the Wings lead the Boston Bruins for third place in the Atlantic Division by 2 points. The Wings and Bruins will play each other Thursday night at the Joe in the D. Marcus Mariota, likely to be a top draft choice in the upcoming NFL draft out in the Chi, is going not make the trip to Chicago, joining fellow quarterback Jameis Winston to stay home and watch the draft with his respective family. Now, there are rumors that the two could be the top two picks in the NFL draft, of course, going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tennessee Titans. But Mariota will not be there. He will be in beautiful Hawaii. All right, yesterday, Tiger Woods played a practice round at Augusta National, meaning that he will possibly make his return at the Masters. Now, Woods has not played since February 5th, when he withdrew from the 2015 Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. The press is expecting Woods to make his decision by the end of this week, but he does not have to make a final decision until April 9th. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call in at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And hey, even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Well, without further ado, how about we start the show?
I just think it's such a memory-making experience when you do things that few can do. And that was my battle cry to my team on Sunday. You know, I just said 2 hours of work, you know, for 60 years of memories.
No good. Michigan State is headed to the Final Four.
And that's about the way it is. You know, those 2 hours of work is going to get you a lifetime, you know, with your kids, with your grandkids. I mean, you always can state something that few can state.
So I'm looking back when you guys made the Sweet 16, Tom had an interesting quote that he shared with us all. I mean, he told you guys, he came into the locker room and said, take your phones and, quote, shove them where the sun doesn't shine, because the same people who had you guys, you know, who are adoring you guys right now, had you in the NIT as well. How much weight does public perception hold with you guys?
For us, we don't worry about it. You know, the thing that makes this team so special, I think, is our togetherness. Man, we do everything together. So even when things were going bad, you know, we still had smiles on our faces.
You know, we had, you know, people doubting us, saying that, you know, we were going to the mid-tournament and, you know, saying that we weren't going to even make the tournament. So, you know, we just said, like, hey, you know, we're just going to just keep, you know, playing hard and, you know, just giving it our all each and every night.
We only look for the negative and use it as motivation. But at the same time, we just kind of concentrate on ourselves and what got us here.
Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. It is April 1st, 2015, and you just heard from Tom Izzo, Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nerin Jr., Brandon Dawson, and last but certainly not least, Travis Trice on, of course, their run to the Final Four and, in a way, addressing all of the haters out there. How about that? You know, it was very interesting. Of course, I was at practice yesterday. It was a long one, folks. It was a long one. Of course, Tom Izzo, the great coach that he is trying to work out all of the nicks and crannies before Michigan State takes on Duke in the Final Four on Saturday night. Man, oh, man, it's going to be a fantastic time out in Indianapolis. I want to remind you all that, hey, Alex and I are making the trip out there. We'll be giving you coverage throughout the weekend on Michigan State's run to the Final Four. We're actually getting there on Friday morning, just in time for Tom Izzo's presser, which is scheduled for Friday at 11:15 a.m. After that, student athletes will take the podium at approximately 11:40-ish, 11:35-ish in the morning. And then, of course, they, you know, this is mandated by the NCAA, where every team who's participating in the NCAA tourney must hold a open practice for the public. So we will be at all of that jazz on Friday afternoon. I should say Friday morning, bleeding into Friday afternoon. We'll be bringing you the coverage from that later on that evening. So watch for our story on WKAR.org that day. And, of course, we'll have coverage of the game itself and all the way until Monday, possibly, if they get past Duke. But let's pump our brakes for a second and talk about this team really quickly. Of course, you just heard. I mean, it was very interesting because I really wanted to pick this team's brain because, I went back and just doing some reading. I'm always doing reading throughout the day. And, you know, I went back and actually, yeah, I read that quote from Tom Izzo in which Tom talked about how, yeah, you know, the same fans, you know, this is right when they had won that Sweet 16 game. Well, when they booked the ticket to go to the Sweet 16, I should say. And, you know, Tom went to the locker room and said, hey, I told my team that I want you to take your phones and shove them where the sun doesn't shine. Because the same people that, you know, are adoring you right now had you guys in the NIT at the beginning of the month, which is so true. Which is so true. And, you know, it's so funny, you know, I could not imagine how it must be as an athlete, especially to go through the type of year that Michigan State went through this season. I mean, just imagine if you're an athlete on that team and you see and you're reading the paper left and right, maybe you're watching, you know, you're listening to Current Sports one weekday afternoon and you're hearing, you know, Alex and I debate about the team and saying, you know, especially after the Texas Southern loss, oh, this team, they'll be lucky if they make the tourney, NIT this, NIT that, blah, 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 which I actually thought they'll make the tourney. I didn't think they would make the, you know, would be that unfortunate that they would have to play in the NIT. But at the same time, this team didn't, you know, wasn't cracking on all cylinders during that portion of the year. However, you know, as an athlete, you got to find a way to tune out all of that garbage. You know, finding a way to do it, especially in the medium, in the world, I should say, that we now live in, where social media has sort of just taken over so many avenues. Twitter is a 24/7 cycle, 365 cycle, where, you know, just with the type of a keyboard right on your laptop or smartphone device, I mean, you can say whatever is on your mind and, you know, people out there, the public can read it. You know, it's direct traffic to you. And of course, the 24-hour sports news cycle, ESPN, you know, Fox Sports One now. You know, I could go on and on and on. I mean, it's always in your face, always in your face. I don't even know if I was a player in today's age, I don't know if I would have a Twitter, folks. I got to be completely honest with you, man, because people can be so cruel sometimes, man. Not to say that I'm sensitive, but at the same time, I don't know if I went out there and had a bad game, I don't know if I would want to hear my name getting bashed left and right by fans out there or just casual sports fans out there watching me on a daily basis. I mean, I couldn't imagine. Let me preface that. I would probably have a Twitter, but I'll probably have my notification set on off. I don't even know if you can do that on Twitter, but hey, I'm just saying. So you got to understand, these are still kids at the end of the day. So you got to tip your cap to what Tom Izzo has done, because it's truly remarkable, you know, because to have his team just ignore what the naysayers, you know, had to say all year. And now you have a lot of what I like to dub, and you guys have heard this term before, you have a lot of Spartan bandwagon fans out there, folks. You do. Let's be honest here. You know, some of them are even my family members, okay? Even though I went to Michigan State, I graduated, you know, got my degree here at Michigan State. You know, my family, you would think they would follow my lead, right? But it's very interesting, because if you went in Metro Detroit, I would guarantee you that there are more Michigan fans out there than Michigan State fans. I mean, my uncle is one of them. My uncle Eddie. I mean, he's a big, you know, I wouldn't say big, but he's just a casual Michigan fan. He didn't start paying attention really to Michigan State athletics until I started going to school here. So, you know, there's kind of a bias that, you know, that needle swings toward U of M in the Metro Detroit area. So now with the Spartans now in the Final Four, I mean, you're starting to see cats who at one time was rooting for U of M or some other squad now converting over to Spartan fans. I mean, you see it. They exist everywhere, folks. And I get it. I get it. You know, even some students, again, there were a lot of students, you know, on campus here that totally doubted that this team could even possibly, you know, make the tourney. And now you're starting to see them with a complete turnaround in love affair. So I definitely want to throw that question out at the team yesterday during practice. Practice went a little long yesterday as well, as you can expect. You know, of course, around tourney time, you know, Tom is just trying to make sure every single detail is fine-tuned, and he wants to make sure that his team is ultra-ready against Duke, because we know Tom Izzo's track record against Mike Krzyzewski and the Duke Blue Devils. But, you know, yesterday I wanted to throw that question out. I mean, just to see that bittersweet love affair between Spartan Nation now, you know, how many of them were kind of bashing this team, you know, a few months ago, and now everyone's adoring the team. Very interesting contrast there. Folks, we've got a great show in store for you today, though. We have a lot of discussion on today's show. Later on, today's Barbershop Wednesday, of course, and we love to embrace debate here on the show. We are going to talk about the University of Michigan football program. Jim Harbaugh, I mean, he's already getting to work fast, folks. I mean, he is wasting no time. And as you just heard, if you missed our quick hit headliners, Auburn's coach, Gus Malzahn, is not happy with a certain move that Jim Harbaugh is making here. Now, Jim Harbaugh has decided to pursue satellite football camps across the country and other schools' recruiting territories. And those schools who don't have that, I guess you can say, luxury of expanding their camps to other schools in other states are a little, you know, ticked off about it, including Auburn's Gus Malzahn. So, hey, I mean, but can you blame Jim Harbaugh? Can you blame him? So that's our Barbershop Wednesday. We'll get to that later on in the show, and I encourage you all to call in 517-355-9527. We'll also talk about the Detroit Pistons and the Detroit Red Wings as the season is quickly winding down for those respective clubs. Can't believe the season is almost done for both of those teams now, and the playoffs are right around the corner. Detroit is on the outside looking in as of now, about four games out of that eighth spot in the NBA's Eastern Conference, while the Detroit Red Wings, of course, I mean, they just cannot close out games, folks. I mean, whenever a game goes to a shootout, I mean, you can pretty much chalk it up as an L in most cases for the Red Wings. So we'll talk about both of those teams. And also, what are the possibilities, the realistic possibilities, that we could see a Big Ten national championship on Monday between Michigan State and Wisconsin. We'll talk about all that and so much more. Again, folks, the number to call in is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But I want to start the show by talking about NFL infidelities. Yeah. Two interesting stories broke this week concerning two NFL clubs. The Atlanta Falcons and the Cleveland Browns. Now, I want to start with the Atlanta Falcons here because I found this one to be rather comical, if you will. Now, you know, the Atlanta Falcons, they have been punished for pumping crowd noise into their stadium. The NFL fined the Falcons $350,000, and the franchise will forfeit their fifth-round selection in the 2016 NFL draft. President Rich McKay will also be suspended for at least 3 months from the competition committee beginning today, April 1st. Interesting story. I want to invite right now engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, my man 50 grand, Alex Shark. How you doing?
So I know it's April Fool's Day.
It is.
Is this a fool? I mean,
is this a joke?
Are we being fooled here, Al?
No, this is actually this story this broke before April Fool's Day. Yeah, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, man. I guess a quick thought I have is, I've been to games before: Michigan games, Michigan State football games, Detroit Lions games, and I'm 100% sure that I've heard at least one team that I've been to pumping noise into stadiums. I mean, this is nothing new. It's kind of what I think, similar to the kind of you kind of got caught at the wrong time, and we saw that with North Carolina, where, you know, everyone makes certain cuts, and with Syracuse too. And not saying that this is a cut, but everyone's kind of changing the game and altering it in some way.
So basically, you're saying everyone breaks the rules, but it isn't until you get caught when you got to just fess up.
Perfectly.
To it.
Oh, yeah. You said it perfectly. I mm-hmm. think that most teams, you can make the argument also that, okay, maybe, I mean, okay, here's the perfect example. I was at the Pistons game last week, and they were talking about how at the start of the game, all the fans get on the edge of their seats, and they don't sit down until the Detroit Pistons score the first point.
Just like at Breslin.
And then following that, there are times where the speakers and the monitors, they raise the music. They have the defense chats, you know, boom, boom, defense, boom, boom, defense. That kind of stuff happens all the time. So for me, where do you draw the line between pumping, quote unquote, noise and stadiums automatically doing defensive chants and making the atmosphere loud to automatically kind of confuse the other team? How about the fan meter? I can't hear you. How loud is it from 0 to 10? There's that meter that goes for hockey games and football games. How loud can you get? Even Michigan State football games, they do that. So for me, this just is an open-ended question here.
Well, this is the thing. There's a few layers to what you just stated, Alex. First off, I don't agree. I think that the NFL was certainly right for punishing the Atlanta Falcons. And I do, you know, maybe so. I mean, I maybe other teams are also engaging in this sort of activity in the NFL. But to break it down, kind of the layers that you just hit upon, first off, I think that natural noise within the stadium, if it's naturally coming from the people who have bought their tickets and who are attending that event, and if they want to lose their mind and provide noise in the game, then they certainly have a right to do that. But where it gets sticky is the Atlanta Falcons were found to have pumped additional noise within the stadium. That's a problem.
Sure.
Anytime when you are trying to alter the atmosphere of a game to bode in your favor, that's when it gets sticky. You can't do that. Now, you know, it's really interesting because I want to read a quote here from the NFL in a statement when this was handed down. They say that, quote, our review also determined that Falcons ownership and senior executives, including team president Rich McKay, were unaware of Mr. White's use of an audio file with artificial crowd noise. Now, who they're referring to is, now former Falcons director of event marketing, Roddy White. He is directly responsible for this violation. And it went on to say that, quote, however, Mr. McKay is the senior club executive overseeing game operations, bears some responsibility for ensuring that team employees comply with league rules. As a result, McKay will be suspended, blase, blase, blah. Now, this is what Mr. Roddy White did. I mean, he had an audio file, which he would insert into the speakers or the program that relays to the speakers in the Falcons stadium, and would play that. And let's be honest here. Crowd noise does affect a team. It can affect the game. Just look at the influential 12th man out in Seattle. You know, I mean, that's a perfect example. Whenever a team plays in Seattle, they always rant and rave about how crazy loud that crowd is. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. Quarterbacks have hard times relaying messages when it comes to audibles to their teammates when they're out there. I mean, and they have to use hand signals a lot. Crowd noise, especially in a game of football, affects a game. It certainly does. So if you are tampering with how loud it is in that atmosphere, and it is directly affecting, you know, the opponent, certainly you deserve to be punished. And that is a direct violation of a NFL rule. You cannot alter anything in the stadium to affect the outcome of a game. And teams are always looking for an edge and are willing to try anything to get away with it, folks. That's how sports is. And I definitely agree with you, Alex. I think other teams are possibly engaging in this activity as well. They just didn't get caught, point blank, period. And, you know, and looking at the punishment here, because I do agree that this team definitely deserves to be punished in this respect. But let's be honest here. When you look at the punishment here, how really bad is this punishment? And how bad is it going to hurt this team? $35,000, that's a drop in the bucket for any NFL franchise. Forfeit the fifth-round draft pick in next year's draft. How bad, Alex, is a fifth-round draft pick going to hurt the Atlanta Falcons? I did some research, actually. Did you know there are only 6 NFL Hall of Famers that were taken in the NFL draft, drafted in the fifth round, and the last one was way back in the 70s. How bad is a fifth round draft pick really going to hurt you? How bad is $350,000 really going to hurt you? That was a fluffy punishment.
Yeah, you make a good argument, but again, there could be all pro players. The Lions have had several fifth rounders.
Come on. Come on, Al.
Yeah.
A fifth round draft pick? Okay, hurt him with a first round or second round.
Look, I'm not saying that it was not a harsh punishment.
Fluffy.
I'm not saying that it should have been harsher, but what I'm saying is don't discount the fifth round draft pick, Al.
Come on,
that's what I'm saying here.
That is not gonna hurt this franchise.
I agree with
one man taking
it.
But
is the crime that bad?
I think it is. I think anytime when you are tampering directly with an possible outcome of a game, you deserve to get the hammer needs to be laid down. I think the NFL again, $350,000, fifth round, that's not going to hurt this team.
Tampering with the game, I mean, Deflategate, I think, is way worse than tampering than crowd noise.
I don't know, man.
Players have to deal with crowd noise all the time.
Again, in that game, how big of a difference would that game have made? I mean, again, I always said they could have played with a beach ball and the Patriots still would have won that game. When you talk about noise directly affects communication out on the field during a game. I mean, so how many times have you watched an NFL game, especially a Seattle Seahawks NFL game, where players afterwards have complained about how loud it's been and how they had to use signals, how you had to burn a timeout when you didn't want to burn a timeout? Those things can really influence the outcome of a game. I thought the NFL could have sent a bigger message. Yeah, I thought it was a pillow punishment.
I agree.
I call it a pillow punishment.
I guess it is different for basketball and different for hockey because for football, it's not as easy as throwing up a sign. I mean, there are so many more positions. There are so many different plays you need to call, more formations. For basketball and hockey, if the crowd noise is really getting pumped in, your basketball players, you already know what you're running. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry, right, Al?
When you look at basketball, the thing about basketball is you're not wearing helmets. You don't have all this equipment on you. It's more close-knit than being out there on a football field where the field is huge out there on the football. You're talking about 100 yards. In basketball, I mean, if you want to communicate with somebody, you can just kind of dribble over to them. You know what I mean? You don't have 11 players to deal with. You got four other teammates, including yourself out there. So I just think of football, communication is so much more vital when you talk about that sport.
No, I agree. There's definitely a bigger field, and it's harder to get across. But overall, don't you think that for basketball, there's just more of a natural flow to the game? For example, for football, if you want to call a hot route or you want the receiver Z to maybe go across the middle instead of a bomb, I mean, you have to basically, I mean, there's a signal just for one receiver. For basketball, if you want a guy to run a back door behind the basket, there's just kind of more of a natural thing that comes with it. The player can see that, mm-hmm. the way the defense is set up. So,
I always say football is more like chess, basketball is more like checkers.
I like that.
I always say
that. That's a great analogy.
Definitely. I always say that, man, because it's more layers to the game of football. I mean, but not to discount basketball, because I also think, you know, coming with game schemes and team strategies is also very, very tough in the game of basketball. But again, there's so many players on the field that communication is vital.
Yeah.
Now, I want to bring up this next story, Alex. I also found this very, very intriguing as well. Now, this is the other punishment that the NFL handed down earlier this week. Now, if you haven't heard, the Cleveland Browns, I wouldn't say drop the hammer here on this individual, but, you know, I also thought this was kind of a really fluffy punishment, another pillow punishment. But Cleveland Browns GM, Ray Farmer, was found to have sent texts throughout, text messages throughout many games during the NFL season to personnel on the sidelines, the Cleveland Browns sidelines. With that being said, Ray Farmer was suspended for the first four games of next year and fined $250,000. What do you think about texting during games, Alex? Was this the right punishment for Ray Farmer?
Yeah, hard to say, but what I can say about this texting thing with the GM is I think this shows why basketball coaches are now GMs. I think the fact that you have more control and the less ownership compared to a team, it just makes everything easier and there's less riffraff. And I think this is a perfect example of why something like that, separating the coach from the general manager, causes issues.
No, I agree. I mean, when you look at this story, you know, again, first off, you know, text messaging during a game, how much, you know, can a GM see, you know, looking at the I don't know how much that can influence a game. You know, we talk about crowd noise and how that can directly affect the team. But Texas during the game, you know, it was said, you know, and Ray came out and really, this is what I found very interesting about this story is that Ray Farmer came out and just said, hey, I messed up here. I admitted I was sending texts. This is what the texts were about. He said that, you know, the texts were about in-game personnel and in-game strategy. But when you really look at it, You know, when reading the article here, the text really did not necessarily deal with strategy, but with issues related to quarterback play, you know, second guessing of play calls, and use of personnel, especially concerning that quarterback position. Now, of course, we all know who played quarterback for the Cleveland Browns last season, of course. And, you know, Johnny Manziel was also in that mix as well. But when you look at it, you know, this is just like, and you directly hit it right on the head, Alex. This is another case of a general manager sticking his nose where it shouldn't be. Let the coaches out there do what they do. You as a general manager, I hate when I see general managers just have kind of a too much of a hands-on approach. I understand some of them are control freaks. One of the big GMs that and owners that stand out in my mind that is a control freak is Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. He's out there on the sidelines. He's talking to players, you know, before the game. He's right there near the bench. And, you know, I don't know if I'm a coach and I'm seeing my GM and owner there. I mean, that comes with a lot of pressure. You're starting to see a lot of coaches in the NBA more so become that GM and coach sort of dual role, like a Stan Van Gundy for the Detroit Pistons. And, you know, a GM sending Texter out a game, as a GM, you hired your coach for a reason. Let that man do his job. Point blank, period. And, you know, at the end of the day, rules are rules no matter what. You know, this directly violates, you know, Ray Farmer sending text messages to anyone on the sideline during a game is a direct violation of the NFL's electronic use, or I should say technology memorandum. If you violate that, hey, you got to be punished. So, I mean, when you look at his punishment, you know, he was suspended for the first four games of next season, fined $250,000. And a lot of people are making a comparison with this punishment and, you know, kind of comparing it to what happened to the Falcons. Why didn't the Browns lose a draft pick here, Alex? That's the question here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's a new form of, we haven't really seen this before, right? So I think it's hard to lose a draft pick when it's something new. I think if it's like a repeatable offense or there's something kind of in the bylaws about this, it would be different, but there isn't. I mean, there isn't a bylaw saying, here's what happens when a general manager texts from the sideline.
And no, they do have, they have outlined it. It's in the rule.
Right, but they don't
say this will happen.
Right.
It's the same thing with crowd noise though. I mean, if you violate crowd noise, it's not in the rule book that, okay, you will lose a draft pick.
Yeah.
So what was the difference here where the Falcons lost a draft pick and the Browns didn't? There's so, and this is what I say about the NFL. There are so many inconsistencies when it comes to the NFL and how it hands down its punishments to individuals.
I agree.
You can go way back to what happened to Ray Rice last year, and there were so many inconsistencies to that story. And that is why inconsistencies like this, when it comes to an organization, is why the NFL and Roger Goodell continues to get bashed. I don't understand it. You know, again, at the end of the day, rules are rules no matter what. So the NFL's, their hands were certainly forced here. They had to do something. But again, really, when you look at it, I mean, you know, the Cleveland Browns GM, Ray Farmer, is not like he's out there coaching. So how bad would that hurt the Cleveland Browns? Really not much. Let's be honest here. And again, looking at the Falcons here, $350,000 and forfeiting a fifth-round draft pick, that's not going to hurt them that much either. So at the end of the day, slap on the wrist. Let's move on. What do you think about it? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527 when we hit our first break here. When we come back, we will talk about the Detroit Lions and how they want to, you know, sort of take the leash off of Matthew Stafford and give him the green light to air the ball out. Interesting. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this beautiful April 1st, 2015. It's April Fool's today, folks, so make sure you're on your P's and Q's. Don't fall for the easy jokes, man, because it seems to happen to me every year, though. I mean, my family loves to joke around with me left and right, but just be on your P's and Q's today, folks. It's always a fun time. April Fool's, man. Gotta love it, right? You know, Alex, I was sitting back watching you know, there's really nothing on TV yesterday. I was kind of searching around, trying to find something sports-related to watch. Of course, you know, the NBA was on. You know, I'm a big NBA guy. And I probably saw one of the best NBA plays I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if you saw Steph Curry and Chris Paul go at it last night. But in the first half of that game, of course, Steph Curry is in the running for MVP in the NBA, along with Russell Westbrook and James Harden as well. But, man, can Steph Curry ball. There was a move that he put on Chris Paul last night. Of course, Chris Paul, guard for the Clippers. Steph Curry has the basketball. He dribbles underneath the baseline. Chris Paul's guarding him. Steph dribbles behind his back like he's about to drive back towards the basket. He doesn't. He does a double dribble right behind his back again, like he's going to the baseline. Well, I should say the three-point line. Chris Paul stutters on it, and he totally bites on Steph possibly going back to the rim. Falls down. He stumbles. I shouldn't say completely fall down. He stumbles, and, you know, he kind of falls down. His hand hits the hardwood. You know, there's a lot of oohs and ahs at the time when Steph puts on the move. And then you got to finish the play. Steph Curry squares up and nails down the jumper. Nothing but the bottom of the net. Wow, was that move sick or what? I think that may go down as the best move of the NBA year. Did you see it, Alex?
I saw the highlight of it, but yeah, everyone's talking about a lot of buzz. I did catch the Red Wings, though, and tough shootout loss, man.
Yeah, which we'll get to in a sec, but man, that play was just nasty. Steph Curry, man, he continues to pad that MVP resume of his. It's going to be very interesting to see who actually comes out with that award as the season moves on. Folks, I want to remind you all that, hey, today is Wednesday. Each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. here at the WKR TV studios, I sit down with a certain guest for Current Sports TV. And tonight I will be sitting down with John R. Johnson, who is the Director of Communications for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. John has done one fantastic job, and he's trying to push the envelope when it comes to high school sports coverage in a way that hasn't been done before when it comes to the MHSAA. So we'll chat about it. It's going to be a fantastic sit down with him. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience tonight at 6 p.m., just simply go to WKAR.org to sign up online for free. Let's transition now to our next subject. And it's, of course, is centered on the Detroit Lions. Interesting news here because, you know, Matthew Stafford is a quarterback that, you know, I've come to find out, you know, throughout many callers here on Current Sports and just casual conversations with Lions fans out there, that there is certainly a love-hate relationship when it comes to Detroit Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford. Now, you know, something that I really didn't pay attention to last season was that, you know, Joe Lombardi, who is the Lions offensive coordinator and works with Matthew Stafford pretty extensively throughout a year, you know, they had sort of a leash on Matthew Stafford last season. They wanted him to sort of more so play within himself, not, you know, take risks down the field, so on and so forth. But, you know, when you look at Matthew Stafford's numbers, and of course this is certainly padded with the personnel that he has offensively with the squad, especially when you look at the best wide receiver in the game in Megatron, Calvin Johnson, Stafford has some interesting statistics that really stand out. He is the fastest quarterback in NFL history to 20,000 passing yards. He's just one of five quarterbacks with a 5,000-yard year and is already the leading passer in the Detroit Lions franchise history. Sort of, you know, definitely gaudy numbers here. And you know what? You know, this year, you know, again, I said that they had sort of a leash on Matthew Stafford, which I had no idea. You couldn't tell with certain instances throughout the year. But this year, Joe Lombardi says that, you know, hey, I want to see Matthew Stafford air the ball out a little more. He actually said, quote, "We'll look for him to take a few more chances this year with the football. He's got the arm to do it and the receivers to throw to." So my question is that the right move? Is taking the leash off of Matthew Stafford, does that seem like a viable thing to do that will transition into Detroit Lions success? I now invite, of course, Current Sports beat reporter here with us throughout the semester, Ben Stram, with us on the show. How you doing, my man, Ben?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Definitely. And also, of course, Alex Sharg is with us on this conversation as well. First off, I want to get initial reactions. First off, I didn't even know that Matthew Stafford had a leash on his collar to begin with when it came to him airing the football out. Were you surprised when you heard this story, Ben?
I mean, not really. They really have had some decent running backs. Like, Drake Bell has been really solid for them. Last year they had Reggie Bush. This year they're going to have to find probably somebody else to help them. I mean, I know Jeremy Langford's been poked around as maybe a rookie they could get, but... You know, they've really had some good guys in the backfield, and, you know, with Calvin Johnson, you're a little surprised to hear this, I guess, because of how good he is. And, you know, even, who's the other? Oh, Tate. Golden Tate, he's a great wide receiver, too. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do next year and who they get to help him in the backfield if they're going to actually go forward with that, you know?
Alex, do you think this is the right move to take the leash off of Matthew Stafford and give him the green light to throw it down the field?
Yeah, I mean, again... How many times last year did we see, you know, second, third down, short pass, or in your three downs, it's a first and 10 from a second and 8 to a third and 6 to a fourth and 3? I just think that last year there weren't a lot of chances taken, and I totally agree with Lombardi here.
Now, when you look at his numbers, the proof is always in the pudding, I always say. If you look at Stafford's personal output compared to years past, Stafford's output fell to 4,257 passing yards and 22 touchdowns. But Detroit won 11 games, matching its best season ever under a first-year coach, and secured, of course, its second playoff berth in 15 years. But I will say this. The offense became the weakness of this ball club as the season went on, I do believe, plunging from 6th when it comes to offensive efficiency all the way to 19th when it comes to total yardage. In the span of weeks, folks, they scored just 20 points per game and 12.2 points per game in games against playoff teams. The offense just looked so bad, so stagnant at so many times throughout the year. And again, maybe, you know, a lot of that had to do with Matthew Stafford having in the back of his head that, hey, I don't want to force anything here. I don't want to just heave it up to Calvin Johnson like I've done in years past and let the offense intercept the football. And, you know, again, the offense proved to be really the team's undoing, failing to score a touchdown in the final three quarters of a 24-20 loss against the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs. I just hope that this green light isn't too green, if you will, for Matthew Stafford. Because, again, I always go back in the day when Matthew Stafford sometimes would just, you know, just kind of, you know, he got too comfortable. It seemed as though Matthew Stafford becomes too comfortable when he has Calvin Johnson, the best wide receiver in the game, flanked to his left or right. When Calvin Johnson is in the game, Matthew Stafford believes that he's Superman, which he is. I mean, we've seen Calvin Johnson pull off some amazing catches. But at the end of the day, you got to put the ball in position for Calvin to make a legitimate gripe at the ball. If you don't, we've seen Matthew Stafford underthrow the ball, overthrow the football. I just hope that we don't see a reminiscent of that, which we didn't see too much last year. What do you think, Ben?
Right. Again, with not having Reggie Bush this year, is Drake Bell going to be the guy? Is he going to be the guy for them?
I think he is. You know, I really like Drake Bell. I think that he's a guy who's more so of a north-south running back rather than an east-west back. I just thought that Reggie Bush, of course, he went through the whole period where he just couldn't hang on to the football, went through the whole fumble situation. I like Reggie a lot, but at the end of the day, I mean, he just couldn't move the chain enough for this team. Joik is a power back.
Right.
Joik, and at times, he can kind of hit you with a little shimmy shake and create some space.
Yeah.
I think he can become that guy.
I feel like part of the problem with Stafford is he's just got so much arm ability and talent. It's just he gets a little too excited sometimes, and you feel like he feels like he can make any throw, you know? And
right.
Sometimes when you get a little too pass happy with him, he makes the throws that you're just like, eh. It's kind of, and trust me, I'm a Bears fan, so I've seen it even worse on another level with Jay Cutler over the years. So it's,
yeah.
I see a little bit of the same with Stafford, but it's not as extreme, and that's why I feel like they've had better success in the last couple of years than the Bears. So
yeah, certainly. And again, I always say you got to proceed with caution here. Of course, you know that I just think kind of, you know, Matthew Stafford takes too much of the blame, I guess you can say, for Detroit's lack of. You know, success when it comes to the playoffs, because of course, anytime you're the quarterback, the most important position out there on the field, you naturally that criticism is going to come with that title. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
I just think there's other holes in this team that's going to be interesting to see how the Lions address it in the NFL
right.
draft.
And D tackle, like, it's going to be something because they lost Fairley and Sue, and I
exactly.
know they got Nada, but
right,
he's getting old, so they need somebody else in there.
Yeah, I certainly agree. Folks, if you want to call in and chime in on anything here on Current Sports, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We have Jody on line one. Welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Jody?
All right, how you doing, Al? First off, man, before I get into my Lions thing right quick, I just want to congratulate the team. You know, was not expected. You know, I'm up here in Canada and watching the games, and the guys have snapped two, and they played ball, you know, and I'm proud of them. I want to give them their props. But more important, but secondly, the Lions, that's just off-season talk, because if they don't draft or build their front line, their offensive line, I don't care how much you unleash Matt Stafford's arm if he can't sit back there comfortably and throw the ball.
Right, exactly. And that's the other thing. They have other needs for this team. You got to protect Matthew Stafford, because at the end of the day, I mean, he was among the league's most sacked quarterbacks last year. I totally agree. You got to give him time to throw the ball at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, now, and plus, you know, the route seemed to take more seconds before it was get the ball out of your hand in three seconds or whatever. Now you look at guys and it's 4 or 5 seconds the quarterbacks are holding the ball. You have to protect your quarterback, and you have to open up holes for your running backs. And until you saw that, I mean, you know, true, it was a better season for Detroit, and, you know, that was nice to see. But until you protect your quarterback and you're able to consistently open up holes, nothing changes.
Definitely agree, Jody. So at the end of the day, do you think that Matthew Stafford gets too much of the blame for the Detroit Lions' lack of success in the postseason?
Well, I think he may, but a lot of times he kind of makes those he makes some bad throws too, mm-hmm. and important times. You know, he'll throw in the double and triple coverage, like you said, because he does have Megatron or Calvin Johnson. He will throw, you know, try to force the ball in the big fella against two or three guys, and I think that hurts them. But, you know, you look at it, Pettaway, you know, wasn't up until last year, he wasn't really reliable as a tight end, and, you know, they didn't have a real great. We use great too much. Good,
right.
You know, because great is for like the Jerry Rices and those guys.
Right,
the guys are good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. That word is thrown around a little too much, right?
Yeah, third graders, you know, because he only dribbles twice and he runs down the court with the basketball. He's great. You know, no.
Right.
You know, so, but I just, you know, but I think that they have good receivers. But, you know, like I say, no line. They have to build their line. Running back, man, anybody can run the ball if you got a hole to get through.
That is certainly true. Jody, appreciate the call, my man.
All right, thank you.
All right, folks, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll have a lot more discussion for you to wrap up the show. We'll talk about the Detroit Pistons and the Red Wings, of course. But also, Jim Harbaugh, he's got some stuff up his sleeve here, folks. He is, of course, branching out from the territory of Michigan and expanding his recruiting essence. I'll talk about that in just a second, give you a rundown exactly what does Jim have up his sleeve. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Some news that broke actually about 47 minutes ago here, I'm reading. Michigan, fifth year, this news is coming concerning the Michigan football program. Fifth year senior quarterback Jake Ruddock plans to transfer from Iowa. Of course, Jake had 2,436 yards and 16 TDs last year. Is that surprising to you, Alex? What do you think about that move from Jake?
There's actually been a lot of hype about this coming for quite some time.
I mean,
Jake's been talking about this. There have been rumors floating left and right about Jake, Al. But the most important thing is Harbaugh has came out publicly and said this. He's trying to get talent there. He's trying to get a lot of different quarterbacks playing. They already are targeting a lot of quarterbacks for 15, 16, 17. And bottom line, he just wants a QB, and he doesn't care how much competition it is or who it is. I mean, he just wants talent. So This makes sense.
Yeah, certainly. I don't know. We'll see when he dines the amazing blue how well he is. I mean, and exactly. You know, Jim Harbaugh talked about in the offseason during this period right here, especially during spring practice, how they want to solidify that quarterback position as quickly as possible. And he's really been putting his guys to work. So, I don't know. We'll see how this move bodes well for him. I mean, this has been rumored for quite some time now, and finally we're starting to see it come to fruition. And speaking of the Michigan football program here, I tell you what, Jim Harbaugh, he's got some tricks up his sleeve, folks. You know, Jim Harbaugh has decided to pursue satellite football camps across the country in other schools' recruiting territories. And, you know, this, of course, is going to make a lot of local schools within those territories a bit uncomfortable. And now, some of them are speaking out, including Auburn head football coach Gus Malzahn. Now, Michigan is slated to participate in a camp on June 5th in Prattville, Alabama, at the high school where one of its 2015 signees, Keith Washington, attended. So, Gus doesn't like it, folks. He says, of course, last year when Penn State held camps at Stetson and Georgia State, the SEC coaches were upset because they have a rule prohibiting them from being affiliated with a camp more than 50 miles from campus and complained publicly about the Nittany Lions. So, that is our Barbershop Wednesday to close today's show. Do you agree that Gus Malzahn should be upset about this?
Well, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but a healthy conversation.
Yes, it's Barbershop Wednesday where we embrace debate here on today's Current Sports. Each and every Wednesday we do that. All right, Alex. Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. Again, you know, you got Jim Harbaugh expanding out and participating in satellite football camps across the country in the backyards of many colleges' recruiting territories. And, you know, Gus Malzahn spoke up about it because Michigan is, of course, slated to participate in a camp out in Alabama. And Gus says, hey, this is not cool. He says that, quote, I think the SEC coaches last year made it clear that we like to make it that way throughout the country. That was a stance after our last spring meetings, and I still feel the same. Now, of course, in the SEC, you know, they have a rule that prohibits them from being affiliated with the camp more than 50 miles from campus and complain publicly, you know, numerous times about this. In the Big Ten, there is no such rule. So, does Gus really have a legitimate quarrel here?
Absolutely. I think if there's a law about it, but other conferences are kind of doing their own thing, he has absolutely every reason to be upset about this. If anything, it's not the matter about that Michigan is bad. It's not about him being upset at Michigan. It's more about him being upset at the conference and the way that they're not able to echo those similar recruiting grounds. I think this is a purely business move. Michigan, as you've seen, is becoming way more national and way more reaching to out-of-state players than they are within the state of Michigan. Look at last year's recruiting class. I think they only had about 3 or 4 in-state players, and so is Michigan State now. Michigan State is also reaching a lot more out-of-state. So I think for both schools, it makes sense to target those schools with a lot of talent, broaden their recruiting base, try to obtain that national stomping ground, trying to get the best of the best. And I think for Michigan, I'm all for it. In terms of Auburn, I know why they're upset. I think they should try to reform the rule. If anything, they should try to set up a camp in Michigan to kind of target right back at them. But overall, there's nothing wrong with this. This is purely a business recruiting move.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you, Alex. I think that when you look at Jim Harbaugh's move here, hey, if it's allowed and if it isn't against the rules when it comes to the Big Ten Conference, then yeah, he's going to try everything in his power to get those big recruits who, of course, are fluent down south. I mean, there's a lot of big recruits down there. So why not, if there's no rule against it within the Big Ten Conference?
Absolutely.
Sure, the SEC may have those mandates, but if there are no mandates for the Big Ten, then yeah, I totally agree. I think this is a very smart move from Jim Harbaugh to expand into other territories to target other recruits other than the state of Michigan. And
right.
Does Gus Malzahn have a legitimate gripe with this? Certainly. Anytime, especially, I also think another part to this whole discussion has to be the aura of Michigan right now. Jim Harbaugh is a huge name. And it's why this story, when Jim Harbaugh decided to become the head coach out in Ann Arbor, why it was the lead story on just about every sports media outlet there. It's why when you saw footage from the press conference out in Ann Arbor when Jim Harbaugh took the podium, it's why it was a standing room only affair. Jim Harbaugh's name at U of M alone automatically puts a positive light on the Michigan football program, one that was a dim light during the Brady Hoke era. So when you have Jim Harbaugh coming in your backyard, of course, he's got a ton of potential to steal a lot of recruits that you possibly could have in for your ball club. So I definitely agree with Gus. Should it be mandated? I think that, yeah, I do think that it is unfair that SEC schools, even though this is without a doubt the best football conference in the nation, even though they are a powerhouse, I do think
but hey,
he has a gripe here.
But look, the Big Ten obviously showed that recently.
Yeah,
is the
I know,
SEC still the powerhouse?
I from a talent perspective, and it's certainly debatable because we had this. How many times did we have this debate last year on Current Sports? Who is the top dog in college football? I think Ben wants to say something. Ben?
I mean, Indiana did beat Missouri.
And there's other games you can point at as well throughout the conference as well. But I think overall, the SEC is consistently across the board looked at as the top conference in college football, just like the Big Ten and college hoops. I think overall, every single year, you have a spotlight on the Big Ten and college hoops because of the talent they turn out every year.
Would they win like 3 or 4 national titles in a row at one point?
Exactly.
So there you go.
Yeah, they have a historical reference they can look at.
Right.
But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, if the SEC or any conference for that matter can't expand their territories into other camps, into other backyards, why should other conferences have that luxury? So yeah, Gus Malzone has a legit gripe here. But I do think that Jim Harbaugh, man, you're starting to see already the work ethic that he has.
Right.
He is willing to do anything and try anything.
He's just doing what he's got to do.
He's doing what he has to do to put Michigan back on the map. And I love it. He's a competitor. And I cannot wait for Michigan State to take on Michigan. That's going to be an unbelievable game.
It's not going to be this year when we're equals, but it'll be in the years to come. There'll be some epic battles between us two, I guarantee it.
Yeah, and I think that, and this is also up for debate as well, whether or not fans out in Ann Arbor, because I feel like a lot of fans out in Ann Arbor, just because Jim Harbaugh is the head man now, is the head coach at U of M, they expect immediate success.
It's not this year.
I don't know if you can realistically expect that seeing where this program was last season. I don't know if you can expect that.
And what, have they lost 3 offensive linemen already?
Exactly. Yeah, they have. I mean, they're hurting right now. So just to think that Jim Harbaugh is going to walk in the door and automatically going to be competing for a national championship, Let's wake up here, folks. I don't know about that one. Folks, if you want to weigh in, didn't get a chance to on today's Current Sports, you can always go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave me a comment there. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. I'll read your tweets on tomorrow's show. And speaking of tomorrow's show, if you can't make it out to tonight's Current Sports TV taping, we'll actually give you a sneak peek into tomorrow night's Current Sports TV taping. That's when we air it, of course, with John R. Johnson, who is the Director of Communications for the Michigan Athletic High School Association. Okay? You don't want to miss any of that. Tune in tomorrow at 1 p.m., same time, same place. Thank you to all of you out there for tuning in to today's show. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic hump day, and be easy, people.